This is special coverage of the Salt Lake City mayoral race from 45 Days, KUER's political podcast. I'm Nicole Nixon. This November, Salt Lake City voters will elect a new mayor. The seat is open following current mayor Jackie Biskupski's decision not to seek re-election. City Councilwoman Erin Mendenhall and State Senator Luz Escamilla are each campaigning for the opportunity to lead the city for the next 4 years. This week, we sat down with both candidates over two consecutive evenings at the business incubator Church and State in downtown Salt Lake City in front of a live audience. This is our full interview with Luz Escamilla. She has spent more than a decade representing portions of Westside Salt Lake City and West Valley City in the state Senate. Thank you so much for being here with us tonight. So I'll just start at the beginning. Why Salt Lake City? What brought you here and what made you want to stay?
Great question. So I am a transplant to Salt Lake City. Actually, I'm an immigrant to this great nation. I was born and raised in Mexico and had great parents that value education. They both are highly educated engineers. And actually, my dad passed away a year ago. But both of them, for them, the priority of education was critical. And my dad really, as professors themselves in universities in Mexico, felt that the best quality of education in the world was in the United States and made a big effort and saved a lot of money to be able to send my brother, my youngest brother, he's 2 years younger, and myself over here to pursue our education, higher education. Actually, my last 2 years of high school, I used to cross the border every day from San Diego to, from Tijuana to San Diego. And Salt Lake City was, I think, a natural for them. They felt it was a safe place. We negotiated, and I said, I'll go to the University of Utah. I'll move to Utah, but I'll go to the U, not BYU, nothing against BYU. My brother went to Brigham Young University, so we balanced that. And what's not to love about Salt Lake City? So it's been my home. It's been a great place for the last 22 years. So I moved here in 1996 after my high school graduation, so I already told you how old I am. And it's just been wonderful. It's a welcoming place. It's a city that has provided me with opportunities to pursue my American dream, to have a family, to see my children be safe, to have an opportunity for them to learn, to enjoy the environment, the landscape, snow, you know, the snow, the beautiful mountains. And I love Salt Lake City, and I want to have my family continue to live and succeed here in this great place.
So what made you get started in state politics?
So this all goes back to my college years, and I'm laughing because I can see Representative Angela Romero, that's a good friend, and we went to school together at the University of Utah. We started doing tutoring for limited English proficient children and organizing communities of color and minority communities. As things were happening in the legislature, we learned that you have to get engaged, and in order to make a difference and have your voice heard, you have to participate. At the same time, we were seeing the limitations of not having representation. So I think that pushes both of us and many others that we know, and they are now elected officials themselves, to really want to have more representation and the ability to participate in all the different levels of government. So that's where everything started from there. It was really an opportunity to continue to work in nonprofit, in the nonprofit sector. So if you guys are long-term Salt Lake City residents, you probably remember Utah Issues. That was a great place for me to work. It was one of my first jobs after graduating from college with had a business degree, was pursuing a master's degree, and I finished my master's degree in public administration with an emphasis on public policy. So part of working at Utah Issues was public health and talking about healthcare for all and the work we needed to do in Utah, and we still need to do in Utah if you think about Medicaid expansion. But it was where we started the nonprofit sector. I had a chance to work as a state coordinator on domestic violence issues. And during that time, always active as a Democrat, where I felt my values were, where I could feel, you know, I could identify it in terms of my values, but also to bring balance. That process with the legislative relationship, I was appointed by Governor John Huntsman Jr. to be the director for the State Office of Ethnic Affairs. That gave me this experience on the executive branch, but I felt I wanted to do more. And I wanted my voice to have a bigger impact, and that's when I decided to run for office in 2008. And, you know, it was very lucky to be able to win. It was not an easy race. And I guess I like not easy races. That's where I'm here now. And it's been a great process. Now 11 years as a state legislator. And for the last 13 years, I've been in the banking world, working for Zions Bank, helping small businesses, minority-owned businesses and women-owned businesses. I was a director for their business resource center, and then the Hispanic market manager, and now I do community development for them. So, you know, I've had this really broad experience both in the private government and public sector, and I feel that's what one of my biggest strengths moving into this campaign.
So you were at the center of a bit of controversy this last week. It stems from former Mayor Rocky Anderson. He pointed to your faith as an active member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and your employment with Zions Bank. But specifically with your faith, he said that Salt Lake City is, and I'm quoting, under threat of having a Mormon mayor. And that sparked some outrage, some back and forth between him and other political observers. I just wanted to give you a chance publicly to respond to any of that if you'd like.
So I don't see someone's faith as a controversy. I actually think people's ability to exercise their faith and practice their faith is a strength of our nation. I'm very blessed to live in a country that allows me to go to church and feel safe. My faith has never been an issue in my work, both my as an elected official and my as a you know, private citizen. It's hurtful to see that we still see bigotry in 2019. I think Salt Lake City does not stand behind issues like that, and it's not what we stand for. Our nation has seen a lot of divisiveness in the last 3 years because of an administration in the White House that has divided based on religion, based on race and ethnicity and gender. I'm confident that the voters of Salt Lake City will look into my record, as 11 years of record is a lot of votes, and they don't align with necessarily where the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is, whether it's medical cannabis, women's reproductive health issues, liquor laws, which are notorious. I'm on the other side. So I stand strong and proud of my votes that represent my constituency and that represent data-driven, evidence-based, good public policy. Why do I respond? I really haven't responded. When the media has asked, we want to share that we don't believe in this race, there's space for that type of bigotry. But I welcome the questions, and I welcome people to look into my record, and I feel really strongly that my record will speak for itself.
Okay, thanks. So you're running on a platform of sustainability. What does that word mean to you, and what areas of the city do you think are currently unsustainable?
That's a great question. Thank you. So we are running in a platform of sustainability because Salt Lake City, it's at a crossroads. We are growing so fast. We're a capital city, and the growth that we're seeing is causing unintended consequences and is growing pains. Mm-hmm. So a Salt Lake City that's sustainable means a Salt Lake City that, number one, represents all Salt Lake City, and that the prosperity that we're trying to achieve and that is here and we can get it and it's possible is not only for a certain group of Salt Lake City residents. So when we talk about sustainability from a perspective of affordable housing, at that point you're talking about affordable housing across the entire city, not only pockets of the city. When we talk about sustainability in the sense of air quality, that should be sustainability for all Salt Lake City residents in a way that air quality is part of our entire conversation. And sustainability when we talk about poverty, right? We don't want communities in our city to be poor. How do we eliminate and close those cycles of poverty? That all makes a Salt Lake City sustainable. And, you know, it's a broader definition of sustainability, but I feel it encompasses our environment and our responsibility towards smart, responsible growth. We want economic development that brings jobs to Salt Lake City, but those jobs need to have adequate living wages. That also requires the city to be proactive on incentivizing businesses that will provide health care and child care for everyone. So that is a sustainability in Salt Lake City that I want to see, and that I feel I can move forward with that vision.
It's a really big idea. Are there specific areas, you mentioned childcare and pre-K, are there programs you'd like to start as mayor?
Absolutely. So let me start first with the very specific one, and we just had a conversation not that long ago in the city about the role of RDA and funds provided to incentivize businesses. They're not unique. The state does it all the time, so I'm familiar with that process. And we need to talk about incentivizing businesses with specific requirements that will require childcare. So if you want to come to Salt Lake City, and we welcome the world to Salt Lake City, we welcome good partners in Salt Lake City, good businesses. Those businesses need to have jobs that we need to see how much they're paying. In Salt Lake City right now, you need to make $24 an hour in order to afford rent. $24 an hour, not 15, not 17, 24. And so if we're going to be wanting to have those partners in our city, I want to make sure that we're incentivizing and providing support to businesses that want to bring those type of jobs with those type of wages, that are going to provide health care and that are going to provide child care. So that is one example. The other one, you talk about sustainability with regards to education and the role of the city. Well, there is one, and that is education starts prenatal care. That's when you start the education for parents and also for the baby. As soon as the baby's born, 0 to 3 is a key portion. Then you have, and I've done work in the legislature that I want to see now, some of those programs completely implemented across Salt Lake City, and that is nurses at home. Those are evidence-based, 30 years of evidence of those programs. Moving those programs along, what happens to the 4-year-olds? We don't have a universal preschool in our state, or in universal kindergarten for that matter. The role of the mayor and the city is to lead on the conversation that no child should be alone, no child should be without a preschool that could allow them to be closing achievement gaps before they even start first grade. So some of those are programs I would like to see. And moving into just another example, after school programs. How does a sustainable Salt Lake City look when it comes to after school programs? We want evidence-based, data-driven after-school programs. The city already has a very strong department and division working towards providing those services. We still have children, especially west of I-15, that are not having access to those programs. How do you expect parents to have, you know, be productive members of our community and be able to work and be full productive members at their jobs when they are still concerned about the safety of their children and where they are after school? So those are ideas where sustainability can be implemented within those frameworks, and you have very specific things that could happen within the city, and I see the mayor being the leader and making sure those are implemented.
So one of the biggest issues always that comes up in every election is air quality, of course. What can the city do to make a noticeable difference on air quality, particularly as the state as a whole and the city grow in population over the next few decades?
So the air quality conversation is critical, and I've been involved for years in the state legislature. I co-chair the Cleaner Caucus. So I've been, since the inception of that Cleaner Caucus, working with my colleagues in a bipartisan effort, because that's the only bipartisan caucus that we have that's very proactive, and also now currently a member of the Air Quality Policy Advisory Board within the state. So it's not a new issue for me. I've run legislation. So one that we need to do that the city has the ability to have an impact is the adequate data collection of our air quality. And you may think we are collecting correct data. There's a lot of gaps. So I've been working in passing legislation to have really research-grade data collection of air quality. I passed legislation to put it in the inland port area, because as those things are moving along, we need to start creating a baseline. So I passed SB 141. That is already collecting data as of July 1st in the inland port area. That includes the airport. We haven't been collecting air quality and water quality in the airport. Were you guys aware of that? It's a big polluter in our city. We need to be responsible also for that information. So one, we've also put research-grade data collection parameters within our UTA tracks. That was actually a project that Representative Romero and I worked together and got the appropriations to make it happen. With that data, now school districts are making day-to-day decisions on what to do with the children. So you don't get kids to play outside if the air quality in that specific area is bad. And you will say, well, what does that change? Number one, is an intervention, because we're in a crisis, so we are having to do intervention pieces. But the correlation between children missing school and air quality has been studied by the University of Utah researchers that we work with, shows that there's a direct correlation between that. So right now, at least, we can intervene and make those policy decisions. So the city has ways to do this, but to answer your question in terms of policy, is in collaboration with the state. And that's been a very strong message of my campaign, and I will continue to say this. The city as a capital city and where we are located requires to collaborate with the state. And the state needs to see how important it is to have a successful, great capital city. And I don't think we have that buy-in yet. And I the moment we get our members of different, you know, leadership in the majority party that don't represent Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County to see the value of a strong capital city, we're gonna all win. And I see that as my role. I think that's where I can go and work with my colleagues that I have already record working with them and passing legislation and get it things done. Air quality will be one that needs to be tackled right away. The other one is our future collaboration with Rocky Mountain Power as we move towards, you know, being carbon free by 2030, which is a goal that I think everyone that's in Salt Lake City agrees that we need to do it as soon as possible. But the timing with regards to that new agreement with Rocky Mountain Power and the timing works for that piece to happen in 2030. And I feel confident we'll get there, hopefully before that. Most people agree that we need to do something. I was excusing myself before that I suffer from asthma myself, and I've been coughing a lot, you know, the last couple of days because the ozone levels are so high, so it's creating some issues. So I was telling you that I may have to cough in the middle of the whole thing and apologizing already. It is real. We all are affected by air quality. My 3-year-old has asthma, and both of us, we see kind of like the trend when we get sick in the house, is the two of us at the same time. So I know it's something that's critical. Having passed legislation that enforces laws so polluters get higher fines is something that I've done also in the legislature multiple times, passed legislation on that. So I feel my record, again, speaks for itself, and I have a strong record of working with all the stakeholders to make things happen and move the needle.
I was going to ask about transportation and cars, because that is another big contributor to the Wasatch Front's air quality problem. We got an audience question. Would you be open to designating any streets to only alternative modes of transportation, such as bicycles, scooters, buses, etc., in order to get people out of cars again, particularly as the area grows so much?
Correct. So let me start by to answer that question in multiple parts. So one, I believe there is the ability to tackle all the different issues within our transportation system. One is active transportation, and how do we promote more people get off cars that are creating about 38% of our emissions right now, and we're feeling it. The second polluter will be buildings. So, you know, buildings are a big issue. Salt Lake City buildings themselves are emitting a lot. So there are different ways we're going to tackle all of this. I think for transportation, the city had a master transit plan, and it was all the stakeholders, and I applaud both the current administration and the city council for working together with UDOT and UTA. That's the way to go. I think that plan makes sense, and to me, implementing it, and which they just started implementation this August, makes sense, and we should move forward with that. I will make some tweaks to some of that part of the plan. To designate one street, I will want to see a lot of feedback from the community. Not everyone has the same opportunities to even access public transit. If you're a single mom in a vehicle coming from the west side of Salt Lake City, it takes me an hour and a half, because I've done it from Rose Park, to get here in downtown. Through public transit, whether I use UTA and tracks. Now imagine if you're a single mom with 3 children, you're trying to get to work by 8 in the morning, seeing here in the picture of this. So I want to be very responsive of ending this sustainable solution to all Salt Lake City residents. So if we have an accessible, affordable public transit and safe ways to get to those places, and yes, let's start talking about moving us towards active transportation. I think the key here is, how do we work with A, funding, because it's all about money. And I hope we're having conversation also about the budget, because we need to start thinking about how are we going to pay for all these great things. And part of our budget situation is Salt Lake City. We welcome twice as many people to our city every day as the capital city that we are. And our tear and wear in our roads and on our systems, you know, our infrastructure is really big. And we need, again, a better partnership with the state. So when we're talking about moving some of these roads, let's talk to UDOT, because they are in charge of some of our state's roads that are in our city. And how do we work with them so we reduce lanes? Because we know that more lanes does not solve the problem. It just brings more cars. But how do we do it in a pace that is also responding to the needs of the community and the people that live in the whole Salt Lake City? So I would say, yes, they should be part of the tool in the toolbox, one of the many different tools, but it will be with very careful consideration to make sure that we're addressing all of the needs of the different people in Salt Lake City. But ideally, we want to move into more active transportation through a safe, affordable, and convenient way.
I want to talk about the inland port, because this has become a major controversy, a big issue in the mayoral race. Just some quick background here about this project. It was created last spring by the Utah legislature, and the state wants to build a big import-export hub adjacent to the airport. They're calling it the biggest economic project in a generation. It's in the very early planning stages, but a lot of local officials oppose the inland port, including you. Why don't you think this project would be good for Salt Lake City or for the Senate district you represent?
Wow, the inland port. Do we have an hour? On the inland port? That's a great. No, it's a great question. So, I want to start by saying that it's not a new piece of conversation. So I want to make sure that we're very clear that this conversation was happening for years. In different versions, actually, the city at one point, Salt Lake City themselves, were proposing that to be some sort of a port in there and a hub, because it is I-80 and I-15 where it crosses. And as you know, we are in the crossroads of the West. That's how we are known also in Utah. And we have in major freeways and highways. So let me tell you now about the process of this specific legislation and why I oppose that from day one. So it actually goes back to opposing the state prison, which was a really big mistake that is now costing hundreds of millions of dollars to the state legislature. And my colleagues, especially representatives on the west side of Salt Lake City, we oppose this. Against Salt Lake City and their leadership during that time that decided to support state prison and get to an agreement with the state legislature. It was a big, bad agreement for the city. That kind of like gave this in for the state. They're like, oh, we're in now. We now want the whole thing. And of course, opposing a lack of transparency, lack of open process for the community that was directly impacted by this, and that is the part where I live, which is Rose Park, your West Point area. It's actually where I live. And is it a, in terms of what the project itself is it's not only what the issue is, it's really the how do we mitigate an impact like that in terms of our congestion, in terms of transportation. Salt Lake City sees more semi-trucks than any other part in the country, really. We're like it per capita. And we know what it means to have that air quality be impacted. The worst air quality in the entire region is that Northwest Quadrant area. So we're breathing it. We're dealing with that congestion. There's impact into water quality, sound, air quality, obviously, and lighting. So when this project that came and, you know, the fighting between the city, which created a big problem, the dissonance between council and mayor's office, and then the legislature, was like the perfect storm for something horrible to happen. And guess what? We are now dealing with this. So, yeah, I oppose due to the lack of environmental mitigation pieces. And then, obviously, they take over land use authority and the tax increments. I mean, that's a slap in the face to every Salt Lake City resident. And it's not the way to do it. So now it is an aftermath of many things that failed through that process. So keep in mind, about 98% of that area is privately owned. So it's private land. It will develop because by that Salt Lake City has already zoned that area. So whether you have a inland port legislation or not, Salt Lake City already zoned that area. I think their master plan included more environmental protections, but it was going to develop. I mean, Salt Lake City already planned that development years before the inland port legislation came in. I think that the inland port legislation coming in is horrible because it reduces mitigation for environmental impact. They didn't have any air quality monitoring, which is what my bill did this last session. And then, of course, takes every power away from Salt Lake City, and we're still responsible to provide services to them. So it makes no sense. So what do we do now moving forward? And we have a lawsuit, and I'm sure if you're following the inland port, you know that the courts have decided to have the first hearing of this lawsuit in mid-November. And hopefully we get some assistance from our judicial branch that says, no, this is a big overreach on the state legislature and the state as a whole, and municipalities have certain protections. But if that's not the case, and moving forward, whether it's an appeal or not, I think we need to be very proactive to mitigate as much as we can in that area, work with those private owners. Now, developing there is expensive. And those private owners and those developers, and they're up for a surprise. You can ask the state how bad it's going for us and building that state prison. It's just crazy expensive because it's wetlands. You're basically building on top of water, and that's not, you have a mosquito abatement crisis happening. Just so you get an idea of how expensive this is, so the state prison itself, what we're going to pay for mosquito abatement is $500,000. Just that small area, it's not that many acres of the state prison. $500,000 a year just to mitigate mosquito abatement. So I don't think that, even the developers are saying, man, this is like an expensive place. Now, how do you mitigate traffic? How do you mitigate all this impact? For one is we need to first address emissions, and I will say electric rail is a way to start at least reducing some of that. And if needed, electric semis, right? I mean, vehicles going that way. I think there needs to be a strong collaboration, a way of really creating a sense where people can come and express their concerns, and working in collaboration is going to be a key. But we cannot let go of that part without understanding that it will be a direct impact. There's a school right off that 215 and 700 North, and those kids have the worst air quality. There's been specific monitoring in that area. And those children have more kids with asthma. I mean, they're doing studies now on how it's impacting just those children in those areas. This is real, and that's why I've opposed that. I continue to oppose, but we need to be ready that there will be some type of development, and I hope if and when elected, I could be the one that's pushing to responsible growth as much as we can. But we need to fight till the end to make sure that development doesn't take place as it's being planned right now under this no tax increment for the city, no land use authority, and the city's still responsible for everything in that area.
This lawsuit that Mayor Jackie Biskupski filed against the Inland Port, you would continue that if you're elected mayor and that's not resolved by January, right?
Correct.
Okay. And how would that affect your ability to negotiate with the state in the years to come, because this is going to be an issue for a decade at least? Would the state be able to negotiate in good faith with somebody they know is suing them?
I believe so, and I know it's a tricky piece. So here's, I think, I recognize that lawsuits bring some tension, but I'm very confident that my colleagues in the state legislature that I've known for many of them for more than 11 years, and I know them and work with them well, they recognize that I'm representing Salt Lake City, and this is something that the city feels very passionate, and there's residents, but I think there's a difference between pursuing some legal process in this conversation and insulting people or calling names. So, I mean, I think there's a difference there. I believe the courts will make a decision sooner than later. I think they will also bring some closure to some of these questions and hopefully be helpful in explaining the importance of municipalities and the role that they have in that relationship with the state. But I've had conversations with my colleagues about this, and they know how I feel about this, and I'm able to work with them, even though they understand where I'm standing and how important it is for us to pursue all of our, use all of our tools in the toolbox to defend Salt Lake City.
You've talked a lot about equity across the city in your campaign, and you say that the west side of Salt Lake City is often overlooked. In what ways have you seen the west side forgotten or brushed aside in the past, and how would you hope to change that as mayor?
So so there's what we call social determinants of health, and those are data-driven information, and usually the Department of Health will handle some of that information, but you can check by zip codes where you have the biggest achievement gap numbers, healthcare access, medical conditions, whether the air quality. So if you start looking into all of those things, you realize that the Northwest Quadrant tends to have more bad numbers when it comes to those issues. There's many factors that come into place, I think. I mean, even having after-school programs, many of the after-school programs are happening on east of I-15, or 300 West, basically. And we only have youth programs west of 300 West right now, the city offers, right? And then the schools do some of their work. Overall, I think if you live in Salt Lake City, this is not a foreign concept. It doesn't mean that we cannot close some of those gaps. And like I said, there are many factors. I think the city can help a lot in bringing equity, for example, in the grid on our transportation system. We don't have that. The city and this master plan that I mentioned before is moving towards that direction. Great. But if you live in Salt Lake City, it's a little bit late for many of us that have been waiting for that. So let's keep on moving that process so we bring equity into issues like transportation, addressing our issues of now the homelessness piece and how after, and we'll get, I'm sure, to that question, where we get to the Rio Grande operation and how it was spread not only to the west side. I recognize that it's in many other parts of the city, but the west side, again, North Temple, impacted tremendously in that business community by this situation of the homelessness crisis that we're facing. So those are some pieces. Actually, food. And we call having, you know, just islands of not having access to nutritious food. The West Side has more fast food restaurants than any other part in the city per capita, but it doesn't have access to fresh vegetables and fruits like other places. Those are part of that sustainability conversation. And the city, with their sustainability office, is already having those conversations. Actually, I'm looking at Representative Romero, and I work on a piece on air quality. How do we have communities in the West Side that usually do not participate on the conversation of air quality? Because for them, they're trying to figure out how they're going to pay their rent and how they're going to feed their families. But how do we now bring tools for them to have an opportunity to reduce their footprint, but also to be more safe when it comes to air quality, especially if they're the ones that are more impacted than any other part in the city? We had, during Saturdays, we did fairs where we will bring, aside from information on air quality and masks for them to take home so they can use, we're also bringing healthcare providers to, provide some, different pieces on healthcare. So there was an incentive for them to participate. We were, in a culturally and linguistically manner, also providing services to our refugee and immigrant community on those places where we see more settlement of those communities. So it's being responsive to the diversity that makes us so rich, but understanding that those diversities also bring pieces of inequality at the same time.
I want to go back to food, because we actually got an audience question. This person says that pockets on the west side of I-15 are considered a food desert and wants to know what your plans are to help incentivize more markets and businesses to open on the west side.
Yeah, so the RDA, again, is a great tool that Salt Lake City has. And the way we zone our city to welcome certain type of businesses, it's what also brings some of those, we can close some of those gaps of food deserts. So if you're, if I'm the city and I'm incentivizing and working hopefully with RDA in that process of bringing good neighbors and good business partners, we want to have places where they can find fresh food and fresh vegetables. Also promoting co-ops within those communities so they can plant and grow their own food. That requires certain type of infrastructure. The city has a role in bringing that into the table. And more importantly, I'm going to do another interview on Friday, and we were saying, oh, pick a coffee shop. And, I'm like, oh, coffee shop close home. Well, guess what? There's only like three only on the west side. So, I mean, even those pieces, right, is how do we bring those type of local components? There's a lot of, ethnic stores that I love and, buy, and I'm one of their patrons constantly, whether it's Rancho Markets, Anaya Markets, and some of the other Asian stores on that west side, but we need many more of that provides fresh fruits and vegetables that are affordable as well. So if you have, you know, you may see a lot of Dollar Tree stores, and, you know, nothing against Dollar Tree stores, but if you see them, you know, there's studies that are showing that are growing on areas that are very low income for working poor families instead of bringing more of the nutritious food that we should have in there.
So I want to go to homelessness now. It's been a tough year for the homeless shelters in the area. There were supposed to be 3 open by now. There are 2 that are about there. One in South Salt Lake has had several construction delays, and the road home was supposed to be closed a few months ago, but it's still operating until all 3 of those shelters open. This whole issue has been a very large collaboration between the city and the county and the state and nonprofits. What sort of responsibility do you think the city has when it comes to housing people and giving people a place to sleep at night, especially when the nights start getting colder?
So the homelessness issue, and I've been repeating this for years, it's a statewide issue. Obviously, Salt Lake City gets, I think, the biggest impact because we house a lot of our services, direct services for individuals experiencing homelessness happen to be here in Salt Lake City, and we're a capital city. For transportation purposes, we're also here, and so people get here, and it's been a crisis for a while now, and, the idea of housing first has always been, and, you know, it's good evidence. There's a lot of studies done nationally. Where we are in the state is thing is to recognize that there's different populations within the many communities experiencing homelessness. We cannot have a one solution for everyone. It's not going to work. And I think the state recognized this, and they just, you know, we just passed legislation that mandated a study, which I've just been able to read, was reading it today, a draft of that study that's been done by the University of Utah, where now is the recommendations are clear in terms of collaboration, in terms of data, because that was a big problem that we had. We didn't have adequate data. We were not collecting data correctly. And, you know, the performance measures that we're putting as we're funding some of these programs. And, you know, the challenge is it's a lot of stakeholders at the table. So the city has a big role because, hey, the number one responsibility of the city is public safety. And this situation is causing public safety issues across the city. Rio Grande operation comes in, and if you guys probably know this, it spread everything. So one, they did tackle a lot of a very concerning and scary criminal element, but that's not everyone, of course. So then we had this revolving door with our jails. And if we don't have those wraparound services, that mental health substance abuse intervention, that it actually follows that person so we can account for them and help them through the whole process, it's, again, another revolving door. So what I've been talking about is this: we need to strengthen that collaboration between the state and the county and the city. Mental health and substance abuse is actually delivered by the county. The state brings some of that funds down through the Department of Human Services. Medicaid, actually through Medicaid, goes Medicaid, Department of Health, Medicaid, Department of Human Services, the county subcontracts, and in the case of Salt Lake County, is Optum, which is a company that currently provides the services, and then trickles into service providers. Well, here's one thing we need to understand. One, we just ranked 51 out of 51 in the nation, so 50 states plus the District of Columbia, the worst when it comes to mental health for adults. That gap is going to hurt us. We're still tackling the Medicaid expansion. Now, for this population, we're covered. So that very expensive Medicaid expansion that we have right now, that's another issue for another conversation, it's covering that population. But we're still not coordinating those services. So, and actually, I was very happy to see that the report was saying coordination is critical. So I think the city has the following role. One is to follow and have those wraparound services through very strong case management for people that have suffered from more than 1 to 2 years, what is considered a chronic homelessness, many of them 10 years being homeless. You're not going to solve that problem in 3 months or 6 months or a year or two. But the return on investment of having that wraparound services and having some transitional housing components where you can have those individuals have true case management that we can follow and actually have adequate data collection of this person, it's a higher return investment than having them go through our jails, our criminal justice system, and our emergency rooms in hospitals, and more importantly, creating some issues related to our public safety. So I think there needs to be a balance between some of the enforcement that we have, give the tools to law enforcement so they can do some of the enforcement that they don't have right now. We were at a community meeting with the Ballpark Community Council. The stuff they're seeing in a three-block radius where the ballpark, you know, field is, the kids cannot walk and catch the bus without being harassed or facing drug, you know, stuff in the roads or people injecting. I mean, this is stuff that should not be happening where our children are walking to try to get to school. So it's finding that balance, but I think we can do it if you have the right leader coordinating with the state, with the county, and I feel with my relationships both with the state legislature and county, we can certainly do that.
We had a listener question on this topic. This comes from Amy. What will be your litmus test for whether the new homeless resource center model is meeting the needs of our city? And if you determine that there aren't enough beds in this new model, what would be your plan going forward?
So right now, as we start a winter pretty soon here, there's not enough beds. So let me start by saying that. We're going from a 1,200 capacity, and I won't say beds because it was not beds at the road home, but capacity at the one side road home to 700 beds in three different sites. I believe that smaller sites is actually the right approach, and I think data shows that most cities have gone that route, has better evidence base that is working better. The one site like LA with 5,000 people, it's not good. So I'm actually applaud the process that happened to go through a route of three sites. But we're not ready because we haven't transitioned to the full service component. So those sites are supposed to be moving people faster out of the emergency shelter support system. The idea is that you put them in transitional housing and temporary housing, whether that is single unit occupancies or some apartments. I mean, we're supposed to move them faster, but we haven't started that process. So we need some emergency shelter for the winter. I believe part of that conversation could be Community Catholic Services, which is right across from the road home. I do not recommend the road home staying open. I know their plan for demolition. I think they should. It actually brings some post-traumatic stress disorder for a lot of the things that were happening there. A lot of people would never go into the road home based on the stuff that was happening there. But we still need to have beds available for people that need to be in a place safe and warm during the winter. I think we will move. That will give us, to the test, what's the test? Well, we're going to have to get that data that shows us that people are moving into that transitional housing. And that way, then they can start using those resource centers and reduce the impact on emergency sheltering. But we need a place for this winter, no matter what. We're going to need at least 200 beds where people can stay.
So I want to move to growth now, which is something we've kind of touched on all evening. And you've talked about sustainable growth. So how do you plan to balance the fact that the state is growing and the city is growing and this need for housing, especially affordable housing, with the city's residential areas? And then also, how do you plan to mitigate traffic from cars and all these people that are moving in?
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, like I said at the beginning, we're growing and growing pains are real. And it's not going to be the same than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And moving forward, there needs to be some, I think, concessions, and people have to shift a little bit their way we do things. So for one, we have to have a plan that makes sense. And that includes the entire city needs to be part of the solution. If you think about building places and growth, it's mostly going to be, a lot of it will be on the west just because that's where more space is. But as we move into some units of housing where you can include in certain areas, it should be in the entire city. And those are, whether it's single room, single occupancy units, or just playing with some of the different pieces. I also want to be very respectful of the communities that have their own sense of community and their own sense of pieces in their area that they want to maintain. But we need to be able to offer solutions across the city, north, west, east, and north, north and south and east and west. And I'm confident that the people want to help and they want to be part of the solution, but it has to be that there's enough open process for conversation and the community feels they're being heard. And part of what I've learned through this whole campaign, that's been a long campaign, and talking to the community, is sometimes they don't feel their voices are being heard, that there's not enough open process for conversation. I want to empower communities by taking City Hall to neighborhoods. It's hard to get to City Hall. I mean, it's like, I love this place, but it's hard to find parking, to your point. I mean, transportation. So how can we be a more friendly city? We take City Hall to neighborhoods. We have meetings where we can provide childcare so parents can participate. It's hard to participate in a meeting if you have a crying baby and, you know, your kids are. So how do we make it so more people participate? I think it's critical. And that part of that growth, by including their voices, will happen more naturally, and people will feel they're part of the solution. So I want to see that happening, and, you know, bringing, you know, interpreters in certain parts of our city, having, like I said, everything from budget meetings, bringing the directors of the departments that are great, we have great directors in our city, departments that are doing great things, having them interact with the public. I want a City Hall that is more, you know, constituency oriented. I work for a bank that we build relationships, and the way we get people to love our services is by having great customer service. I believe the city should be in the business of providing great customer service to constituents and Salt Lake City residents. Everything from getting a license for, you know, something that you need for the city, or getting a permit, which in Salt Lake City tends to be a long saga, like almost like a Game of Thrones process. And I was like waiting for the next season that never came, and then it was disappointed. So we, you know, having that process be in place where you feel that City Hall is responding to you, I think it's important, and is how you bring this type of solutions. There are not going to be easy conversations, but they need to happen.
There's an audience question. What is the most realistic and effective way to keep housing prices affordable in Salt Lake City?
So we're having the conversation about affordability in housing, is there's complexities to that. So one is, who are those developers? And these are only new housing that we're talking about, right? So we have to separate this. The market is driving. Our economy is driving, and the market drives a lot of these prices. And if anyone here is actually in housing and it's a, you know, property management, they know this, is the market is driving it. But there are pieces that I think the city can do, or people can do, to bring pieces of intervention. So one, those developers that want to develop in Salt Lake City, there needs to have a percentage if they want to get part of our incentives, if they want to get our support and be team players with us, that they have to have an X percentage of affordable housing in their units, and they have to be included in all their units. Also, not only building small one-bedroom or studio apartments, we need to also think about families. Our families are leaving Salt Lake City. It is almost impossible to live in Salt Lake City as a family. We want everyone to come to Salt Lake City and feel that this could be their home for their children. If they're young adults, or if, you know, they're families that are retiring, and so affordability in terms of what is my units that are available, and is there enough diversity of units for all the things that we want to bring to Salt Lake City. Those developers need to be including affordable housing at good levels, not 1 or 2%, but 10 to 15%. And nationally is a respected amount of units, those percentages. So I think those are pieces that could be included on the affordability. But also we want to start talking about wages. So the only way you are able to afford housing, you know, and living in a city, and, you know, if you need three jobs to be able to live in Salt Lake City, I think we need to start addressing also what type of jobs we have in our city, and what do we want to have our residents enjoy their quality of life. And we understand people are going to have to do certain things to be able to enjoy, you know, the beauty of our city, but it shouldn't be that it's only for a few, and we want to make sure we're having conversation about wages. And if we talk about, for example, women, studies have shown, and I serve with former Representative Chavez Hawk that's here, we were together in the Women in the Economy Commission. The number one reason in Utah for women not to participate on good, better jobs and better wages, better positions, or higher education is childcare. So we need to have those conversations, and I think the city can lead in some of those. And put their money where their mouth is and walk the talk. And I think City Hall should offer childcare for their employees, and they don't do it right now, and I want to see that happening.
Matt in the audience asked, how will you attract tech companies to relocate and stay downtown?
Great question. So part of my job at Zions Bank is working with Silicon Slopes. I'm actually a member of their executive board, and I have this conversation with Clint, which is their executive director. I'm like, Silicon Slopes needs to be in Salt Lake City. Nothing against the good point of the mountain and Lehigh, but it belongs here, and we need to do better to attract tech companies. Our values, I think, match many of these tech companies. You see a lot of unicorns growing on that area, on the Silicon Slopes area, Utah County corridor. Part of it is how friendly the city is to businesses. So if you get a chance to look into some of the stuff we're talking about in our website and our campaign, is Ready for Business Salt Lake City. Are we ready for business in Salt Lake City? I don't know that I can say that. And I'm saying this as someone that works with businesses and tries to help them through this whole process. So we need to expedite and look at our process. How good are we in welcoming businesses to Salt Lake City? Our incentives also are critical. There is space to do things in Salt Lake City. I mean, there's conversation of creating an innovation technology district southwest of the city. I feel that would be great. And bring, create this atmosphere, kind of like the Silicon Slope, and hopefully will be Silicon Slopes atmosphere where you can welcome this type of businesses. We have great support with the research park that we have in the, not only the University of Utah, we have Salt Lake Community College, West Point campus, and Salt Lake campus, and the downtown campus. So we have already education facilities and institutions that are helping us to really start putting great workers for this type of businesses and companies, but we need to make it attractive. Part of making Salt Lake City attractive is talking about all the amenities of Salt Lake City. So one, obviously, is our nightlife, and people want, especially people are not that are coming from different parts of the world, they're looking for cities that are welcoming and they feel that they belong to, and that's one of the biggest things that we can attract with our downtown and some of our things that happen here. But our education system. Let's talk about education again. Because if the city wants to be a destination for innovation, for technology, for businesses, if we're not a destination for education, businesses look into that. And I've been, because of my work at Zions Bank and participating with, collaborating with EDCU Utah, we look into that when businesses are checking between Seattle, Salt Lake City, or other parts of the country where they're going to relocate. They're like, homelessness. They look at that. Actually, we had a business that does their first thing they do when they visit a city is they wake up at 7, between 7 and 9 a.m. and start walking around downtown of that city. They were very disappointed. They're like, yeah, this is probably not what we want. Air quality. You guys have heard, this is real. A business came in, they fly in, like, wait, what is this? Oh, we're having a bad inversion day. Okay, we're leaving. Thank you. This is not what we want. And education. And we've had this conversation. So what does a mayor do on education? Clearly, we have a governing board that obviously elected board that oversees our Salt Lake City school district and a whole administration that does that. But what a great thing would be if your mayor collaborates with the Salt Lake City school district and goes and talks about the importance of making Salt Lake City that strong. Because of our many families that are living in Salt Lake City, we're losing kids in a very high rate. We're actually the one that's probably losing more kids than any other parts in the state. Our WPU then is decreasing. Guess what? All of our funding. So we need to balance that. And that's an issue that's pretty particular to Salt Lake City. You need a mayor. You need a council. You need our Salt Lake City legislators that represent us there, and our Salt Lake City district, school board, and administration to work together, collaborate, and go to the legislature and say, we need more funding. We need a specific, funds to help us mitigate and balance that so we can still be that strong capital city that you want so we can attract more businesses. So, it's that sustainability piece. It's having all of those come together, and they're not isolated silos. You can't isolate these issues. For someone, the education of their kids is critical, the safety for them to walk to the park, access to open space, obviously, be able to breathe quality air, all of that, are part of what makes Salt Lake City a great city. And if we're not careful, we can certainly be in a very difficult, more difficult than where we are right now.
I want to get to one more audience question, then I have one final question for you. So this person says that you're such a great senator and advocate on the Hill, but they want to know what your motivation is for shifting from the Hill to local office. What can you do as Salt Lake City mayor that you can't do as a legislator?
Great. That's a great question, and I get that question all the time. So let me start by saying I love legislative work, and I'm a policy geek, so you can see me. I get really excited about these issues from a policy perspective. But my 11 years as a legislator, part of my frustration was not being able to impact the city I was representing more. And it was part of it was the dissonance in between that communication with the state and the collaboration piece. I want to see a Salt Lake City that collaborates with the state and the county, and I think it's possible. Doesn't mean that our ideals and our values are going to be the same. We don't have to align with them all the time. I think they're just better ways to work together. And I feel that's where I bring my biggest strength. With my years of experience, I'm a consensus builder. I believe that we can get things done if we work together, and that's what I'm very interested in doing. I felt the timing was perfect. It was, I made the decision after the session ended. And I had people approach me before, and because it's a family decision. I have a great family that supports me and loves me, and that's why I'm here today. It was a family decision, but we really felt it's a critical time for Salt Lake City. Like I said, I'm really worried that if we have the same stuff, the same, we're gonna get the same results. We need to shift the way we do things. I don't have all the solutions. I'm not going to lie. I don't have them. But I'm a person that believes in teamwork. I believe that people have great solutions, have great ideas, and I know how to work together to bring consensus in that process. My commitment to Salt Lake City residents is that I will listen, that I deeply care, and that I'm a very hard worker and passionate because I want to make sure everyone gets to enjoy the beauty of Salt Lake City. And I'm feeling that's getting away from many. So I feel the timing was perfect for our city. It's a critical time. And that was my motivation to run for Salt Lake City mayor.
So my last question is, what do you hope Salt Lake City looks like 4 years from now? It seems like a long time, a long ways away, but it'll fly by. What areas do you hope to make a difference on if you are elected?
I love that. So if mayor, I'm mayor. So 4 years from now, I think... If and when elected, I feel we will have a Salt Lake City that will be the proud capital city of the state of Utah in terms of the city, the state embracing that. That will be something that I feel I can accomplish before the four-year mark. And it's not that easy, but I think there is ways we can do that, and that will change our the way we work with the state and the county and other municipalities. And I think it's also a great conversation to start measuring. I'm a very data-driven person. I want to be more data-driven so the community feels that they can see how the needle is moving. I want to see a more effective, organized city in terms of how it runs. I want all of you to feel that you can go to City Hall and feel that you're being served and that the city's working for you and you're not asking for favors. And that's my vision. I want this, a city that's inclusive, that feel like you can feel you're part of the city and that you have a place to be listened. And that's how I see City Hall for the next 4 years, if and when elected.
Luz Escamilla, state senator running for mayor of Salt Lake City. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.